We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Blue Wire.
Welcome back. This is the Big Blue Banter New York Giants football podcast. I'm Dan Schneier, joined as always my co-host Nick Filato. The mailbag was overloaded. It was overfilled. We sorted it, but we had to move on to a second mailbag. This is mailbag part two, baby. Let's dive into some more questions from the listeners. How you doing tonight, Nick?
I am doing excellent. Ready to dive into more questions from these wonderful listeners we have.
Mail time. Let's let it rip.
Seaboro Now asks, I think it's at Seaboro Now, so you guys can go at him if you would like. Has Jason Garrett ever successfully made use of a player with Kadarius Toney's kinds of tools in the past? What's the most similar player he's worked with? So I actually have two players that come to my mind here. Tavon Austin, that was in 2018 and 2019, and I want to say, I actually have some things written down about Tavon Austin for some reason. In 2018, he was targeted 13 times, had 8 catches for 140 yards and 2 touchdowns. I remember a lot of them being trick plays. And then he ended up rushing the ball, I think, total of 12 times within the 2 years for just over 100 yards and a touchdown. In 2019, he had 24 targets, 13 catches for 177 yards and a touchdown. So that one doesn't really, you know, inspire any sort of hope. You want to see a little bit more than Tavon Austin, yet I think Kadarius Toney is a much better prospect and player than a Tavon Austin. And another player that came to my mind a little bit, just from a size standpoint, is a running back, the kid out of Arkansas, not Darren McFadden, but Felix Jones. Now, they are different players, but Felix Jones was used as a receiver, was used more so as a running back, especially when injuries happened along the Dallas running back room. But Jones never really fully lived up to the draft selection when they ended up taking him. So it doesn't necessarily, but that was also years and years ago. So it's not something that I'm necessarily overly worried about. I'm overly worried about what I saw in 2020 and inserting a talent like Kadarius Toney and then seeing it translate based on the play calling that we saw within the Giants personnel last year. Granted, the personnel is now upgraded, obviously. So yeah, those are two players that did end up coming to my mind who I wouldn't say are totally comparable to Kadarius Toney, but they did come to my mind.
Yeah, and you mentioned that was years ago. That's true, but that still does worry me because Jason Garrett's offense that he put out there in 2020 on film didn't look all that different from what he thought would work in the 2010. So while it was years ago with Felix Jones, he didn't change enough. But I would say this as far as the hope goes, as far as the silver lining here goes, Seaboro Now, there's hope, at least in my mind, that Jason Garrett will be forced to make some drastic changes, I can only hope, to that offense this year with all the new minds they've brought in. And I just don't think you draft Kadarius Toney to and then use him as a traditional slot like Golden Tate was used last year in Garrett's system or something like that. So I still have some hope there.
Think about that upgrade, too. We haven't really harped on that enough. Mm-hmm. The upgrade of Kadarius Toney over Golden Tate in 11 personnel.
Yeah.
It's a huge upgrade right there from an athletic standpoint. Obviously, Golden Tate is a... is a professional football player who's been playing for a while, who has a Super Bowl ring, who is one of the best receivers who actually made people miss throughout his career. But last year he was zapped athletically. So that's going to be a nice upgrade for the Giants. Still hasn't been signed. No, I don't. Didn't he tweet something recently about like how he's rolling in? He's basically going to get signed. I think he tweeted something recently. Oh. So by the time this drops, maybe he is signed.
All right. Tej Holes asks, for the Giants to be a top five defense in 2021, who do you think would have to be their defensive MVP over the course of the season out of these three options? Xavier McKinney, Blake Martinez, or Azeez Ojulari?
Well, out of these three options, if I had to pick one, I'm going to go with Azeez Ojulari, I guess. But I think the answer, if I'm just talking about other players, would be Leonard Williams. That would be my default there.
Okay. I'm going to go with Xavier McKinney because I think if Xavier McKinney can give them what they expected when they drafted him, which is a Swiss Army knife type guy who can play a lot of single high looks but can also play in the box and also play kind of over the slot if they need him to, or if there's multiple guys in the slot, if a team is playing a little bit more creatively on offense and they motion a running back into the second slot, anything like that. They have multiple players in the slot. I think he can help there, come down, help there. So I just think ultimately he can play that biggest role and that most important role. It won't be the one that gets a lot of attention. It won't be the one that is in the stat sheet like somebody like Ojulari can do, rack up sacks and rack up pressures and force fumbles. But I just think he will ultimately be that most important player out of those three.
Unless he has like the Landon Collins type of interception season. Mm-hmm. Then you would definitely rack up those stats. Alrighty, Larry Darling asks, would you rather have rookie season Barkley with the cap hit or the 2007 version of Jacobs and Bradshaw for the upcoming season? I've been watching Jacobs' highlights recently and I miss watching him run over defensive backs. You and I both, Larry.
Yeah, Larry, it was fun those 07 years where the Giants, like, remember, they did have Bradshaw and Jacobs, but that offensive line was so good. That's Derek really Ward what too, made man. It. Like, yeah, they had a year where I believe they might have had 3,000-yard rushers with Derek Ward, or he was close with 800. Like, anyone was running behind that line in 07 and 08. But to answer your question, I would definitely rather take Barkley over either Jacobs or Bradshaw. Unless you could give me that 2007 offensive line or that 2008 offensive line, then I'll take, if I get those along with it, I'll take Bradshaw, the combo of Bradshaw and Jacobs. But Barkley can run over D-backs too. Just look at some of those rookie season highlights. He can also make them miss, and he can elude their tackles. So he can do it all with the only question mark I ever have with Barkley is his vision on inside zone, which hopefully the Giants won't run as much, and just his general vision as a running back I don't think is anywhere near elite. And I think a lot of people overlook that. When everybody I see on Twitter says he's the lockdown number one running back, it's almost like they're just looking at running backs in this mold of if they're the fastest, if they have the most big plays, if they can force the most missed tackles, if they have the most power and size, they're the best. But there's nuances to playing the position. Nick Chubb is the best example of that. Dalvin Cook's another example of that. The dude had a 30-inch vertical and fell all the way into the second round because he had such a bad vertical jump and tested so poorly athletically. But what he was in college is what he is now. Incredible vision runner who makes incredible cuts and sets up his block. So ultimately, I still take Barkley. I think he's better in almost all regards, with the exception of maybe vision from those guys. And if I'm not getting that 07-08 O-line, I'll just take Barkley.
Yeah, I'm taking Barkley on the rookie contract. But since you mentioned the cap hit, I think Dan would be on board with me here. I'm not taking Barkley when he's the highest paid running back in the league. Yes. Mike asks, do you think Jason Garrett will last the season? With the variety of weapons on offense, does he have the vision to use them? My concern is he's Mara's man and therefore untouchable.
It's a great question, Mike. I think that we've discussed this before. I think there's definitely, in the realm of possibilities, a non-zero chance, without a doubt, that John Mara won't fire Jason Garrett under any circumstance. They're good friends. John Mara believes that he's a good professional. I don't think Dave Gettleman really wants to change offensive coordinators in season. I think he was more open, and so was Mara, to changing offensive line coach. That's a little different, I think, especially because, as we kind of know, Colombo was Garrett's guy. They kind of were like, all right, Garrett, you can bring in your offensive line coach. We don't have any real great grasp on the offensive line coach market. And then this offseason, they put a lot of time into it, and they found Rob Sale. It's like, they obviously got to Guglielmo midseason. They're like, all right, this is as good as we can do for right now, but we're going to have a whole offseason to try to find that coach. And so I think they'd probably rather use a whole offseason to try to find that corner. But I don't think it's impossible with the role that Freddie Kitchens has kind of been upgraded to, and kind of that assistant head coach type thing. And I would say that because of that, it's not, again, it's a non-zero chance that he will get fired. So it's a non-zero both ways for me. It's a non-zero they won't fire him. It's not fair they will. If you're asking me what I think will happen, I think he'll coach the whole season.
Yeah, more than likely. And hopefully that offense is going to be stabilized. But anything can happen. I mean, we saw some crazy stuff happen with Mark Colombo. But I actually had a random question since you brought up Dave DiGuglielmo. Of the Giants' 2020 staff outside of the coaching staff outside of Joe Judge, who would you want to have a beer with? And Patrick Graham. You can't bring Patrick Graham in there.
No Judge, no Graham.
From a personality standpoint, like just watching DiGuglielmo's conferences and stuff like that, guy seems like somebody I would want to have a beer with, to be honest.
Yeah, I think
I don't even drink beer.
I think Googs is don't even get into that, please. The fact that you won't enjoy a beer is just unbelievable. And then I found out, and this is the funniest part. Well, that is a thing with beer. Yeah. It is true that it is an acquired taste, but once you acquire it, it's unbelievable taste.
I had it when I was younger. I just strayed away from it.
Okay, but a beer after like a long hike or a beer after like a long, like, oh my God, it's so good. It's such a good feeling. But I did find this out recently from Nick's girlfriend, Diana. Apparently, when he did used to drink beer, so now he just doesn't drink beer at all. I assume because of the calories. I can only assume it's because of that. But when he used to drink beer, he would drink the Michelob, like those Michelob Light, like the thing they put on TV. It's like, you know, they're like, these guys are like running. They're like, you could drink beer and still not feel bad. This is 29 calories. Michelob
Light. 90 calories.
90 calorie beer. He knew the exact calorie down to an actual literal number, a digit there. But yes, when I heard that, I was just like nodding my head. I was like, are you kidding me?
I'm a whiskey guy, though. So calories don't really matter. I love a good glass of whiskey. That's my acquired taste of the poison.
There you go. But as far as who would I have a beer with, it would have to be the Googs. If not, Tyke Tolbert.
Yeah, I was going to say Tyke is my second. Or Jerome Henderson, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
that'd be cool, too.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
Honestly, though, maybe I would choose Jason Garrett, because if I can get him a little drunk and, you know, I fucking slip in a couple shots, I can start to ask some secrets about those Dallas Cowboys years. That would be pretty interesting to find out.
That would be really interesting.
All right. Giants Roddy Piper, who we've been hoping. It's either Roddy Piper or Roddy Piper. I always read this as Roddy Piper because of, like, the old wrestler, Rowdy Roddy Piper. But who knows if that's what it is. But loyal fan, obviously, you've wanted to get on the locker room. I know we've discussed this, but apparently you can't get on because you don't have an iTunes app. I think Locker Room, if you're listening, step it up. We got to get these Android users on.
Absolutely.
All right. Anyway, he asks, if you could pick one home game to go to next season and one away game, which would they be and why? And I know you're asking this because you're considering making the trip from overseas to watch your Giants play, which I think would be awesome. And so we're going to give you our answers. Nick, start us off. What would be the one? Let's start here. What would be the one home game that you would love to go to?
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, you know what? I think we should get rid of... Should we get rid of the NFC East, or do you want to take that into?
No, I think that should be factored in.
Okay, my one home game I would probably end up being the Dallas game. I believe it's in Week 15. So that's the one home game. I think it could be a really, really important game. It's against Dallas. You know there's going to be a bunch of Dallas fans there. And obviously, I'm also considering Week 18, but that's going to be really cold. Granted, Week 15 is going to be pretty cold, too. I think I'm just going to ignore the weather and just go with importance, and I think that Dallas game could be really important. So that would be my one home game. Now, as for away game, you know what, man? I kind of... And I'm doing this not because I think like the Giants can win, but I'm doing this because I would like to go see Patrick Mahomes and be in an environment like Kansas City. So I think I'm going to have to choose that Monday Night Football game at Kansas City.
Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions. And now they want to help you even more. With a Credit Karma Money Spend account, you can be rewarded for good money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot and your Instant Karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. And when you make a purchase between June 8th and June 30th, you'll automatically be entered to win $1 million. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated. Member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply.
I'm going the total opposite route here. I am factoring in weather, Nick, because I've been to a lot of Giants games in my lifetime, and I've been to a lot of cold weather Giants games. I've been to games that are so cold that you had to put a cardboard box on the concrete in front of you, a trick that my dad taught me and his dad taught him. So for those of you fans attending games, use that cardboard box trip when it's super cold. You had to triple sock up. You had to go boots.
Can you walk me through this cardboard thing? Yeah. So you have to put cardboard on the pavement.
On the concrete under the seats.
To keep your toes warm?
It just makes everything better. Trust me. You're much warmer. Yeah. You put the cardboard box on the pavement. Tell me if anyone's listening and has done this trick or knows this trick. Someone can attest.
Insulating yourself from the weather with the cardboard?
No, I don't know what it is, but you put the cardboard on the concrete, and then you put your feet on the cardboard instead of straight on the concrete.
Okay.
Yes, it's a good move. Trust me, it works. But anyway, I'm going to advise do not put yourself in the East Rutherford winds in late December, which is what week 15 is now with the new NFL schedule. Yeah. So instead, I'm advising you step it up and you go to the Giants-Falcons on September 26th. Good chance the weather's still okay. More so, this is probably the best chance for offense you're going to get all year. I think this could be the Giants' best offensive game of the season. So who doesn't want to see offense? That's a big factor for me. So I'm saying go there. And then the opposite for me, for the away game, I say go Giants at Chargers. Few reasons why you should be doing this. One, it's going to be beautiful in Los Angeles, as it always is. Two, it's a dome, so who cares? And three, the Chargers don't have any home fans. So you don't have to worry about things that I would never suggest you do, like going to an Eagles game. I mean, I've never been to the Eagles, a road Eagles game, but I've heard from my dad and my mom that my dad once took her when they were dating before they got married, and the Giants had a pick six to win or to get to overtime or to win in overtime, and they literally had to run out of their seats to get out of the stadium because they were firing things at my mom and dad and cursing off my mom, and she was scared.
How can you curse at Nancy?
Yeah, I don't know how you could curse her. She's a saint, but you know what? Never go to an Eagles away game as your first game. Dallas might be okay. Washington might be okay, but I wouldn't suggest those. Go to LA. Enjoy the weather. Enjoy the fact that they don't have any fans in their stadium, so you might actually have Giants fans outnumbering their fans.
That's a good point.
So those are my calls.
That's a good point. DK Whitman asks, would you rather have Jones, Tony, and Chicago's 2022 first, or Fields and whatever we could have gotten for Jones, presumably a second or a third? Do you think you will feel the same way in May 2022?
Excellent question, DK. Excellent question. I'll start by saying I don't know if the Giants would get a second or third for Jones. Who knows? It's so hard to say. That's totally dependent on teams taking the time to watch his film and that type of deal would never happen in a day. That's not like a draft day deal. That's a deal that happens over months. You pitch the idea that you're considering trading a guy like Jones, then the other team starts to watch his film, the other team goes back to the pre-draft evaluation they had of him, and then maybe you find a deal.
There's one player or one team that I feel like would, and that's the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, they liked him, but
Pat Shurmur mm-hmm. loves Daniel Jones. I think that is definitely one team that would if Pat Shurmur wanted it and say he was done with Locke, which it seems like that could be it because they did bring in Teddy Bridgewater. Right. I think that's one team that would do that investment. But anyway.
Yeah, so let's say it was a second or third. That's fine. So you get a second or third plus Fields, or you get Jones, Tony. And by the way, when you get Fields versus Jones, you reset the rookie contract. You get him on the first year of his rookie cheap deal. Or Jones, Tony, and Chicago's first. I'm going to go. Now, this is a cop-out answer, DK. But it's the truth. I haven't watched Justin Fields' film. Like, I didn't watch the quarterback class in depth, with the exception of Zach Wilson, who I fell in love with. It's the only guy. I watched, like, 9 Zach Wilson games on film. I don't think I watched a single Justin Fields game on film. I saw a lot of games broadcast. I watched a crap ton of Big Ten football. I obviously saw him rise to the biggest occasion and dominate that Clemson defense, and he looked awesome out there. I think his skill set is filthy. He runs a legit 4-4, so he can be a factor in the game, and he has great arm talent. And everything, and he's a winner and he's tough. All that is good. But without actually watching his film, it's hard to say. So I think for me, I'm going to lean on Jones, Tony, Chicago, especially because I know if I need to after this year, there's going to be a lot of quarterbacks that have already started to intrigue me in that 22-22 class. Malik Willis to me, whoo, baby, Malik Willis has talent just oozing, dripping with upside, Malik Willis. And you have Spencer Rattler, who looks like he has a lot of talent, not the same kind of player as Malik Willis, but also has incredible amount of talent and more of a pocket passer type talent. So I really like what I've seen from him. And those are just a couple guys to start. I mean, some people really like Sam Howell. I haven't watched much of him. Some people like the kid from Ole Miss, Matt Corral. Haven't watched much of him. But knowing I can do that with my two picks because I get it in the Chicago trade, I'll probably leaning with that one.
Yeah, Fields to me has a higher ceiling than Daniel Jones, but I'm still going with Jones, Tony, in that 2022 first. That, even with the rookie contract and all that stuff factored in, for me, I think I'm firm on the Jones, Tony, and Chicago's one. And then I'm going to ask you this one, Dan, because it's specific to you. Darren Menny asks, Dan, from one Mets fan to another, what's your take on the Mets season this season?
Great question, Darren. I want to start by saying this. How good, how great has it felt, and I know I'm going to make some enemies with this comment, but how great has it felt to listen to your Yankee fan friends complain about this season? All I hear from every Yankees fan I'm friends with is complaints. We're so bad. We're the worst. We're this and that. This guy sucks. That guy sucks. We can't. All we can do is hit home runs or strike out. That's like music to my ears. It makes up for anything that's happened to the Mets. But I will say this regarding the Mets. I am optimistic. And my pessimistic side would say the bullpen is a little bit smoke and mirrors right now. Obviously, the bullpen's been really good the last few weeks. That I don't feel as confident. It feels a little smoke and mirrory, but Familia's pitching with confidence, which I like. And obviously, Diaz for now hasn't blown up. But what I will say is there's a lot of positive regression that's going to come to this Mets batting, to this Mets lineup soon. There's no chance in hell Francisco Lindor bats 202 the entire season, okay? There's no chance in hell Dom Smith bats 250. And even other players like Michael Conforto, who's batting 238 at this exact moment that we're recording, I think he's going to come up as well. So all those guys are going to start to put the ball in play more often. I think all those guys are going to start to home run more often. I mean, Lindor and Dom Smith and Conforto have combined for 6 home runs right now. That is unbelievably low. Like, from a regression standpoint, if you just look at... And for baseball, I don't think regression is a good thing to always say for football. But for baseball, these stats do tend to regress, either positively or negatively. So I'm feeling good about the batting coming around. I think the bullpen will hopefully hold up. So maybe I'm too optimistic, Darren, but I have been since Steve Cohen bought the team. And I'm going to remain that way. You know, we don't get a chance to be that optimistic all the time, Darren. Okay, so let's go on to the next question from Rohan. It's, we don't hear a lot about Dexter Lawrence. What are your expectations for him going into year 3 for the Giants?
We touched on him a little bit before, and honestly, just going through his PFF stats and everything, like, he's graded well, but again, like, I don't know what to really put into that, but I'm just looking at the stats in general. He played less snaps in 2020. He played 701 in 2019, 655 in 2020. Now without Dalvin Tomlinson there, I think it's going to be up more towards the 700s if he remains healthy. And he had solid pressure rates both seasons. He had 30 in year one. He had 29 last year, was able to get 7 sacks in between. And like we kind of said a little bit earlier, he's somebody who has a high floor, but his ceiling isn't overly high. But I still feel good about him. I'm not writing him off. I think for his role in this defense, he's very, very important. He's just an absolute load to block. He clogs interior gaps, not even as a nose tackle, but you can put him as a 4-eye. You can put him as a 3 technique when they line up in tight. And he can just eat double teams and allow those linebackers to scrape over the top and put themselves into positions to execute their run fits. So I really like Dexter Lawrence, but again, I don't believe he's a high ceiling type of player, but that's just not his role. He's not an edge rusher. No, those guys are the high ceiling type of guys. These are the guys who do the dirty work, who might not get the stats that you want, but are vital to just the entire continuity of your defense.
Yeah, Nick nailed every key point there. I don't think there's anything he missed, to be honest. The only other thing I would add to that would be that one part of me was a little intrigued by the possibility of, if they didn't bring in a guy like Danny Shelton, to see him at the nose. Because I just was intrigued, like, what would that do for the defense? It would look different. I just feel like him at the nose is a lot different than a player like Dalvin Tomlinson. It can maybe unlock some stuff. I don't know if it can. I don't know if it can't. But that's obviously going to be out the table, I think, with Shelton on signing. So, but ultimately, you hit all the key points
there. He may play nose sometimes, but I want Shelton at the nose.
Yes,
I want Dexter Lawrence where he was, because I know that offenses are like, oh, we have to block this 340-pound guy trying to move laterally. Yeah. And then, like, he's so good, too, at, like, using his instincts and feeling out the blocks and feeling when that transition is going to go. Because say it's going to be some sort of a double team block and climb, he feels when that guard or when that tackle is going to climb, and then he usually does a really good job getting to the half man of the non-climbing offensive lineman, putting himself in a position to make a play on the football or rush the passer. So I think that's something that he does really well, and I only think he's going to grow from here because he, you know, reportedly works his ass off, has all those good football characteristics that you look for. So, but again, not the highest ceilings. That's just not his game.
Yeah, and I think he does a lot of the dirty work, a lot of the things that don't always show up in the box score, a lot of things that specifically help with the run game and the run defense, which has its obviously has its merits and has its role in any defense.
All right, Dan, do you think Riley Dixon will be the Giants punter week one of the regular season, or do you think there's some like undrafted guy is going to kind of come in and possibly take that role? And also, who will be the Giants punt returner and kick returner in week one?
Yeah, this one also comes from Rowan. It's an interesting question with Dixon because if a scenario plays out where there's a June 1st type cut or an offensive interior lineman who they really like to potentially start week one, but they don't have the cap space for him, they might make Dixon a June 1st cut to create cap space. I don't think that's the route they go. I think they probably just restructure some of what they already have on the roster. So my guess would be he's the punter week one of the regular season. And then the second part was who will be the Giants punt returner, kick returner. And I think that's a little bit more fun to try to guess. I think Tony's going to get his shot in the punt game right away, right early on. I think that's kind of why they drafted him. As far as kick returner goes, I think we're probably going to see the dude from Arizona who they just drafted, Brightwell, because I think he'll make the team anyway because of special teams, and I think he's shown a little bit. I think they believe that maybe, like, usually those guys, but remember, they had Deion Lewis back there returning kicks last year. So ultimately for me, it's like I'm at the point with kick returns where now the way they've set it up with touchbacks going to 25 instead of the 20, with the likelihood of fumbles to just destroy your game and the unlikelihood of a kick return touchdown happening or a big kick return happening, I just mostly want to take the 25-yard line touchback anytime anyway. So for me, it's like less of an interest, I would say.
Yeah, honestly, I think Jabril Peppers could be a punt returner too. I think Kadarius Toney is going to have his shot at that, but I think you're right. I think if we saw anything from last year's, and I mean, Deion Lewis didn't really do a great job at this, but they like a safe kick returner who's going to hold on to the football. Right. So maybe you're looking at a running back or maybe a more sure-handed receiver rather than maybe one of those defensive backs. But at the same time, Corey Ballantyne we've seen take kicks back, and I know a lot of that was in the Pat Shurmur era as well in his rookie season. So the kick return, I mean, Brightwell's a good call, to be honest, if he can prove that he can hold on, but I think ball security is going to be the big thing there, and I don't know why Deion Lewis fumbled so much last season. It just seemed to, you and I were always just like, what's wrong with this guy? Like, I don't even get it. What are you doing on the roster? Anyways, but yeah, for punt returner, I think that's hopefully Kadarius Toney.
Yeah, especially if he's not immediately playing like 70% of the offensive snaps or something like that. All right. Rowan has one more question. We're going to let him get it in because why not? We're having fun. It's a mailbag pod. He says, besides the interior offensive line, what position group would you say is the one of most concern?
I think there's a couple ways you can go here. I think tight end could be brought up if Kyle Rudolph isn't healthy. Then you're just kind of retrotting Evan Ingram, who didn't fit in this offense. Caden Smith, who we like, and Laveen Toilolo out there. That's not something that's great. I think linebacker, if there's an injury to Blake Martinez, you're not looking at a great situation. I mean, what'd you do? You brought in Reggie Ragland, and that's really it. And you hope Tay Crowder takes another step. So those would be the two positions. I think you did a good job in the draft addressing the edge, the talent at the edge position by bringing in Azeez Ojulari, Ellison Smith, two different type of edge rushers. So I would say tight end and linebacker are probably fighting for it. What about you?
Yeah, for me, it would be a little bit of an outside the box type answer, I should say. For me, it's going to be the quarterback position. So they currently have Daniel Jones and Mike Glennon as their quarterbacks, likely to go into season with just two quarterbacks. And, you know, through his career right now, Daniel Jones, he has 22 interceptions in 27 games and 29 combined fumbles in 27 games. So combining those two numbers right there, I'm not the best at math, but I can probably do this little example. That's 51 turnovers in 27 games, almost averaging two turnovers per game, which is, you're never going to win. You're never going to win a Super Bowl when your quarterback is averaging two turnovers a game. But even, you know, adding to that, he has a career 6.6 yards per attempt, which is just goes back into, you know, he just hasn't generated much offense with his arm through the first two seasons. So ultimately, you know, if you're a guy who has, what, 35 touchdowns and 51 turnovers through his career, and you're not generating much offense on a per-pass basis, you're still a big question mark to me. I'm still very concerned heading into year three. And as far as Mike Glennon goes, I don't think he's going to do anything if he comes in. He might be a little better than Colt McCoy, but he might be worse as well. I think he should be more competent, though. So for me, that would be the position that's the second most concerning to me. Honestly, it's a position, if I'm being completely honest, it's a position that's most concerning to me.
Yeah, and especially if Daniel Jones doesn't end up hitting. So Adam Johnson asks, hey, fellas, is it possible for you guys to come up with a plan on how to ask Judge and the position coaches during the season some scheme-related questions this year that the beat writers don't ask at all? Hashtag Big Blue Banter.
Well, I like that you hashtagged, Adam, and you're a big fan of the show, and I know you've been trying to get some questions in, and sometimes we miss you, and it's been miscommunication. So happy we got a chance to this time. It's an interesting question. So Do we have any ideas, Nick, for some kind of scheme, a plan that we can come up with to ask Judge questions? Because just so you know, Adam, neither Nick or I are credentialed with the Giants. I have gotten credentials before. I covered three games during the last season before the pandemic for CBS, but that was a different role that I was in with the CBS sports company at the time. When I was on 24/7 Sports, I was covering the Giants exclusively, and I got some access to training camp, never got access to the game. The Giants are known for being pretty stingy with their credentials and their access, so I doubt they're going to let a podcast only get access. Not to mention, I couldn't pull that off with my normal work schedule. Maybe we can get Nick there if we can hook that up.
Yeah, I mean, there's possibilities of me being on the calls, but it's going to be a while, I think, for me to earn the right to ask a question, to be frank with you, because they don't know who I am. But with either Sports Illustrated or SB Nation, I'm sure eventually I'll be able to be on the calls, and that's one step. If I ever get a chance to ask the question, though, it won't just be a cookie cutter question. It will be a scheme question.
Yeah, I love that. And I feel the same way, Adam. If I am asking questions, they won't be cookie cutter questions. They will be scheme-based questions. They will be, you know, personnel-based questions, all the type of interesting stuff that doesn't often get asked. So I don't know about the plan for this year, maybe, Adam, but down the line, potentially. All right, Nashington, D.C. asks, expectations for BJ Hill this year. Will he be a full-time contributor or a lifelong rotational player?
Thing is, I don't know how much when they roll out those like 2-4-5 type of defenses, they're going to have big defensive linemen out there outside of those early downs if they still employ those tight fronts, where I think BJ Hill will be there. And last year he played, I think, considerable amount of snaps, 37 in the Dallas game, but before that it was 20, 21, one game was 18, one game was 15, averaged around like 28 snaps. I'm hoping that can get bumped up to like the mid-30s, but it also depends on the situation of the game, what defenses the Giants are using and all those types of things. And if they are rolling out there with just two down linemen, one of them is definitely going to be Leonard Williams, especially if it's in passing situations or second down. And the other one, I could see them wanting to use Dexter Lawrence. I think putting BJ Hill out there is going to be sound on those tight fronts sometimes, but you have some talented players here, to be honest. I mean, especially if you want to use Danny Shelton as a nose, because if you're going to use Danny Shelton as a nose, then you're going to put Leonard probably on the backside at three technique, and then Dexter Lawrence, as that 4-eye. So where does BJ Hill fit in? So he might be looking at more of a rotational role, but I'm hoping that rotational role still consists of a lot of snaps, especially on third down. So I'm hoping he has some sort of third down role if they want to employ some bigger bodies, because I do believe his upfield burst, ability to get to the half man, use his hands violently, and also bend through his lower half, something that we don't talk about a lot on the podcast. He has some good flexibility for a 300-pound dude, plays with really good leverage. I would love to see more snaps of him, but I'm not sure how much that's going to happen, especially if the Giants want to continue to use guys who they're going to drop into space, like Azeez Ojulari, Ellerson Smith, and bring in those edge type of guys more, give them snaps on those third down situations.
Yeah, I mean, you outlined it perfectly there. I think, ultimately, BJ Hill is one of the most underrated players on the roster for the exact reason you said, and it was what Dave Gettleman said when he drafted him, and he was right. This guy can flip his hips. This guy has really good bend for a guy who's that size. And like you said, that upfield burst. I mean, when you watch the All-22, he flashes on such a limited amount of snaps. And even last season, like, he topped out at 37 snaps. That was his season high in the last week of the season against Dallas, and really had tons of games where he was barely over 20 snaps. And so I think he'll get a few more snaps with Dalvin Tomlinson gone. I think Danny Shelton won't play quite as much as Dalvin Tomlinson did, and that could lead to some opportunities for BJ Hill. But they do kind of also like Austin Johnson, so he could eat into those as well. And like you said, they might try to get those guys like Ellerson Smith on the field in certain situations when they have these two-man down fronts. And so ultimately, I don't think it's going to grow too much, but I do really like what I see from Hill every single time I watch the All-22.
I mean, even in those limited snaps, pass rushing, I think it was like 11% of the pass rushing snaps he was on the field, he ended up getting a pressure out of it. So he was amazing. Getting there. And there were games where we were like, dude, look at BJ Hill just absolutely destroy this guy. Look how he uses his hands. And we were like, yo, man, this guy's grip strength is really good. Look how he anchors down here. So he's definitely, like we say Sterling Shepard is an underrated player on the offense. I feel like BJ Hill is that underrated player on the defense.
Yeah, spot on. All right, Jason asks, realistically speaking, say Dave Gettleman wasn't the general manager, what could we get for trading Saquon Barkley?
What could we get for trading Saquon Barkley? So is this coming off of an injury or is this healthy?
That's a good question. Let's say for a hypothetical situation, it's after this season and he returns to 2018 form. Everything goes right, let's say.
Everything goes right. He has almost an MVP type season as a running back, but obviously that usually ends up going to quarterbacks. I don't know, man. I mean, the whole he only has 1 year left probably dilutes it considerably. But I think you could definitely fetch a second and a fourth or something like that. possibly if a team really wants a running back and it's going to be a late pick and they're desperate for whatever reason, maybe a one, but you're not getting a one from a team that's not going to be, I don't even know if you'd get a one, to be honest, dude. I'm trying to think of like a, not a Kansas City Chiefs, they have Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but like a team that doesn't really have a running back that may put a high priority on that and maybe can get 2 years out of him being successful.
Yeah, it's tough to say because it's like, this is a tough question because we haven't seen it happen at all. There's been no examples of this at all. Yeah. So because of that, it's difficult for us to kind of factor this in. I have like a totally different take than you on this, but I don't think either of us are right or wrong. I think it's based on, we don't have anything.
All it takes is like one team.
That's it does all take one team, but I just can't imagine any team would be, it does only take one team. You're right. So it's so hard to say. I don't think any team's going crazy for a running back about to expire on.
I agree with that, but
off of two major injuries.
I do agree with that. But if he puts up, say, 15 rushing touchdowns, 1500 yards, 75 catches for, you know, just under 1,000 yards and like six receiving touchdowns. I mean, I think a one is probably a little aggressive. You're right. But like you, like we said, it's just one team. You're definitely, I would not be shocked with like a two and a four or two and a five though.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I can't, I wouldn't be shocked with anything because there's no frame of reference for this kind of deal. And ultimately, like if Dave Gettleman, if they have a good season, Dave Gettleman's re-signed. John Mara and Dave Gettleman are making Saquon Barkley the highest paid player in the NFL. And I'm sure of it. I said in January, I thought that Devontae Smith would be the Giants draft pick. And if the Eagles didn't trade ahead of him, I would have nailed that one in January. So I was feeling good about my prediction. So my next prediction was the record of 11-6. We'll see if that one comes into play. That was quite optimistic of me. But this is my other prediction. The Giants will make Saquon Barkley the highest paid running back in the NFL.
And I think the highest paid running back right now is just north of 16,000 or 16 million for Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, and with the new TV deal coming in and the rise in the cap, it will be close to 20 million per year, I believe, maybe 18.
Range. Which is so much money allocated to the running back
position. It's a horrendous use of your resources. We're not going to get into that. I'm not even going to argue that. It, to me, is inarguable. So we'll go on from there. And there's tons of history that suggests that it's obvious. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott contract. Todd Gurley contract. Literally every contract that's been signed for these guys. And that's these are some of those guys had a clean bill of health at that point. Like, Zeke didn't have what Saquon had. When Saquon tore his ACL last year, he also tore his MCL. It was really bad. The swelling was, like, on for a week to the point where he couldn't get the surgery until a week after he originally wanted to get the surgery. And that's after spraining his MCL bad during the season before that. Like, it is what it is there, but we're not going to get into that now.
Yeah, so Glenn Perez asked, and this is going to be our last question, actually. Rick Saratella from NFL Draft Bible really praised the Giants' day three picks, said A-Rob would be the best nickel cornerback, maybe even the best DB on the team. Ellerson Smith, with huge upside, would definitely get a second contract with the Giants, and Brightwell would make the 53. Wondering your thoughts.
I'll start with the first one. I think A-Rob could definitely be the best nickel cornerback. I don't think there's any chance he's going to be the best DB on the team.
Year one, at least.
Ever. I'll go ever. I don't think he has the ceiling of James Bradbury or anywhere close to that.
Yeah, but just James Bradbury's not on the team in 2 years, and then like he develops, then I...
All right.
You're hoping you're not in that situation, yeah. But I'm not going to say that.
I don't think he has
never.
The ceiling of Xavier McKinney. I don't think he has the ceiling of Jabril Peppers. Like, I don't know. I'm off on this one, I guess, but I definitely don't see that. Ellerson Smith, huge upside, would definitely get a second contract. Possible. I mean, it really...
So much has to happen.
So much has to happen. I think that's just kind of just like a bit random to me. I don't know. I don't know.
No, I agree with you, yeah.
I don't know what I really say about that. Brightwell will make the 53. Yeah, I think he will. They put such a high priority on finding these special teams aces, especially if he earns that kick return job, which I think he could. I think he could definitely make the 53. So I would say yes on that one.
Yeah, the Aaron Robinson one is aggressive. I'm going to say there's the avenue to that isn't likely, but can I see it actually happening? I wouldn't be super shocked, but I also hope the Giants have a better secondary than that. And Aaron Robinson, I love him as a prospect, but he's also relatively undersized. Doesn't project great to the boundary, so you're looking at more of a nickel guy, more of a star player, more of a versatile second-level defender than somebody who can consistently play on the boundary or to the field side cornerback. Outside cornerback is really what I'm referring to. But I do love the player, but that is a bit aggressive. And like you said, the Ellerson Smith thing, so many things have to happen. How many times? We haven't even seen many Giants drafted getting second contracts with the team. So,
yeah, not recently, but hopefully that will change. Hopefully. That's necessary to change. All right, that's it for the mailbag tonight. We got all the questions in. If we somehow missed your question, we do apologize. Hit us up. We'll get it in on the next podcast. We promise no matter what. Remember, if you want to help us grow the show, there are multiple ways to do it, and all of them help us. Two more than others. The first and most important is please go to YouTube right now. Type in Big Blue Banter. subscribe to our new YouTube page, like a couple videos, watch a couple videos, do the exact same thing on iTunes with your podcast app. And make sure you always hit download, by the way. This is a little thing not everybody knows. When you listen to our podcast and just hit play, but you don't actually hit download, it doesn't count for us. And that actually hurts us. So please don't do that. Please actually download. Please give us a rating review. Join us on Tuesday nights, every Tuesday, 8 p.m. on Locker Room for live Q&A. And then follow us on Instagram, NYBigBlueBander on Instagram. Otherwise, have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you soon.